야, 안녕하세요. 제 이름은 레네입니다. 그런데 내 친구 이름이 훨씬인가?
가린입니다.
네, 가린. 어떻게 Blessed Child 알아요? 아세요?
지금부터 영어 하겠습니다.
아, 그래.
Oh man, you're
알겠습니다.
good. That was for all our Korean speaking listeners.
네. 가린, 한국말 얼마나 what is it? 몇
몇
년?
년?
몇 년?
얼마 동안?
얼마 동안 공부했습니까?
나는 뭐 13살부터 17살까지 공부했어요.
오. What? You were in Korea till 17? Or for
Yeah.
7 years? You
No. For 4 years, 3.5.
for you from 13 to 17.
Yeah.
Okay, you finished? Did you finish GOP?
I don't know what that even means, like
Well,
going to college.
right. Yeah, tell us about everything. Let's rewind.
Oh, man.
Hey guys, welcome to the Blessed Child podcast. This is Colleen and Renee throwing it back to some early years.
Yeah, we're going to mix it up here, you and I.
You and I. So, Colleen, thank you for reaching out to the Blessed Child podcast to tell us your story. I know you've been listening for a while, but also I've known you for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And it is time to share your story and empower your platform and give you a voice, whatever language that is.
Thank you, Renee. Oh, it's really great to be here and to see you. And yeah, I mean, when you said we've known each other for 20 years, I was like, that's a long time.
And it is.
And also, you were a baby, essentially. But so was I. We're not that much, I'm not that much older than you. Like in the long big picture, I'm not that much older than you. But when you're little,
But in Mooney years, with the hierarchy established, with
it's a
Kalima
big deal.
Unni, you're
That's
a
a
prep, you're a big deal.
it is a big deal.
You were pretty
Dude,
much, yeah, our
yeah.
mommy.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of like we're gonna hop around a lot because we our neural pathways are so like interwoven, you and me.
Right.
Like I'm sure like with a lot of people you interview, like you have like themes that you can relate to because of the church, but like for us, like our themes are like woven because we lived like together in different ways. So
Yes,
we're gonna
we.
hop, I feel like we're gonna hop around.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to tell people we did a little bit of meditation work before this episode started, and we drew three cards. I kind of want to tell everybody
Oh,
about those cards,
yeah.
because they're so empowering and they're so spot on.
And I mean, you all can't see it, but maybe we'll use the picture. We'll ask for permission. But the first card, actually, the person looks just like Renee.
It's
So beautiful.
spot on. Spot on. She's like crying tears that look like diamonds, and she's got this lotus flower that she's holding, and yeah, it's perfect.
She's like your pure, like higher soul, like your spirit.
Gonna take a picture of this.
Yeah,
Oh my
you
gosh.
can find it online. So this card is this is a deck of like empowerment affirmation cards, and this one from Autumn Sky Art, and this one is called Compassion. And it says, be a witness, release emotions, transmute pain through love, seek to help others, and keep an open heart. So that feels very fitting.
Yeah, that was magic. There's magic in the air.
Magic. I know. Okay, so you want me to do the other two that I picked?
I think that would be really a lot of lay down, like a lot of groundwork for us, so the audience knows kind of
Where we're
where we're
coming
coming
from?
from. Exactly.
Okay, we're tuned in. Okay. This is my tea. So this is loyalty. And three women with they're leaning on each other essentially and holding hands. And there are three wolves. And I actually known this card like since like maybe almost 10 years ago. I saw it on Facebook like a million years ago. and have always had this imagery in my head, and it's really beautiful. And they're surrounded by like doves. Oh, and there's actually five wolves, not three. So, yeah, beautiful. So the card is loyalty, and it says build alliances. We are stronger together. Fortify symbiotic relationships. Make time for friends and honor promises.
And
So
that's what we're
beautiful.
doing today.
I know, it made me tear up.
Yeah, it's like the words "Adam dapke himnel," so beautifully powerful. I don't know. My
You're
Korean's
so
all messed
good.
up.
Oh,
No,
you remembered so
I
much.
don't know if it's real. It's just it kind of feels like a faraway dream where you're like, they spoke a different language. I can't remember if I know it the right way.
I get it. Well, himne is like, I feel like you'd say like that to empower somebody. Himne, like have strength. But you're right. I think you could totally use it. And the last one, so potent and so perfect for today and for this podcast, it is the death. It's essentially the death card. So it's a skull with a butterfly rising out from top of his skull.
I love that. Rebirth.
Oh, it's so good.
Transmutation, transformation.
Transmutation, transformation. Yeah,
It
same,
says,
same.
yeah, let go.
You can read it.
Yeah, let go, accept impermanence, recognize the light in all things, seek blessings amidst challenges, release the past, be present, and make peace with death.
Ah.
Yeah, make peace with death. Actually, my name means rebirth. Renee, that's what my parents called
Ooh.
me, so I feel very connected to that message.
Wow, Renee, I see that in you. You're
Yeah.
definitely a transmuter.
Oh, thank you. I'll take that. I will take that.
Listen, listen. I mean, I have chills. Yeah. I feel like, I mean, you're like the, you know, the gatekeeper, but like not keeper. You're just like the gate guardian of people's transmutations. That's what you're doing.
But like, there's no fee. I'm just letting you in. Like, come on, get here and come
It's
here.
completely compassionately you
Yeah,
are,
yeah.
and as a loyal friend, that's what you're doing.
Thanks, Cuddy.
I have
Yeah.
chills.
The only thing that I'm noticing, the biggest challenge with getting people to transform is they have to want to. That's the hardest thing. And when you reached out and you wanted to tell me your story, you wanted to share your story, you wanted to release the past and let it and move forward, that I admire that so much. So I'm here to give you that space because that is the hardest thing, to get that power, to feel empowered, to want to do that, to want to walk through the gates. That's the
Thank
hardest thing.
you. Thank you for saying
Yeah, I see that. I respect that so much.
that. Excuse me. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, as you said that, it made me feel like what the journey's been for me to be able to get here, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't come easily, the moment of release, I think, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's start at the beginning so people can understand how we are so interwoven in each other's
Okay.
lives. Tell us about where it all begins.
Okay. So the story begins. So, I want to get into that, but just because it's at the top of my head, and I'm a riffer, I just want to speak to what you just said because it feels very potent for me, which is, you know, I think for any kind of trauma in a person's life, I mean, I'm not an expert, but just my own lived experience. And, you know, we all as a human being in the world have trauma, you know, and it can happen at any moment, not just in your childhood, but for us, it's a lot in the childhood. But, you know, I've had other traumas in my adult life, and I feel like for each one, you know, I'm not ready to talk about any specific one at any given moment. Like, I feel like it does for each wound, you need time to like process or let it, you know what I mean? I see that for people, like something really horrible happened or like they're dealing with something, like you have to let them come to their release of it at their own time, you know? So I just like how you said that. And yeah, in regards to like my this story of my childhood, I definitely feel like I'm ready to like start writing the next chapter of my life. And in a very, I feel very empowered to do so, which I'm really grateful that I finally feel empowered to do so. And so as I feel like I'm jumping off into this next part of my life, I was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm ready to like just speak the story. I want to write it one day, but just to get it out of me, and hopefully it can both be a purge and a help for other people. So I just wanted to say
No, I
that.
like that a lot. Thank you for reminding us of that, the journey.
Where do we begin? This is so funny. How do we begin?
1982, Madison Square Garden.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god. Yeah, actually. Yeah, no, thank you. You're great. I love your input. That's helpful. 1982. Yeah, my parents. I was born on a cold winter day.
So
No.
cold.
I was actually born in the middle of summer, but so yeah, I was born into the Unification Church. Second child, 1986, New York City. I feel like it's important to talk about my parents a little bit. They're the reason that I'm here. And so yeah, I feel like I'm gonna go into that a little bit.
Okay, I'm here. I'm
Okay.
gonna ask a lot of questions like I don't know anything about you, if that's okay.
Of course. Yeah, you're great. I trust you. Okay, so my mom and dad. So she grew up in Florida, and my dad grew up in Japan. He's Japanese. And my mom was a very angsty person, to say the least. You know, she had a very traumatic childhood. I think a lot of our parents, I think if we look across the board of the like Unification Church adults that were in the church, were all traumatized people. I feel like most of them were. And if I look at the broad angle of the world, I think our parents' generation, that whole generation of the world, had a certain trauma. And our parents, I think a lot of them maybe came from abusive homes, alcoholic homes, homes with neglect, things like that. I feel like I've seen that. And my mom, her mom and dad split when she was young, and she grew up in poverty. And essentially, the more I get to know my mom, the more we talk, I'm realizing that my grandma, her mom, and I say this with a lot of love, but she had really intense mental health problems. And she really was possessive and obsessive over her children, and wouldn't accept any help from her ex-husband. And so she just got government money, so they were just eating very limited amounts of food and like had no clothes. So they were just raised up in poverty. And the thing with my mom was that she actually had a very traumatic thing happen when she was a baby, when her dad was washing her. I don't know if you know the story, Renee, if my sister told you. When my mom was like, before she like she was like one, and my like it's really traumatizing, but her dad left her in the sink to wash, and water came out scalding hot, and he left her in it. So she was like fully burned as a baby. So she like something in her brain like just shut down and froze, you know, as it would after that experience. And she was essentially mute until she was four. So that kind of shaped the person that raised me later in life as my mom. And I always sort of go back to that because I see how that was very impactful for her life. Yeah, so it's a lot to talk. How do you do this? I'm taking a moment.
How do I do it? Yeah, I see a lot of parallels actually, but I'm not, I mean, like you're telling your story, but I'm seeing like visions of so many different
Really?
people's stories flash in front of my eyes. That's how I'm processing it.
Okay.
I feel like you're not alone. Your mom's not alone.
Yeah.
Like you're telling a story that is true to in so many different ways.
Like kind of like a universal theme.
It kind of is, yeah. And I am basking in it because you're actually putting words to something so complex.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just new to like speaking long form too, so I'm just like getting used to using
Oh,
my voice, you know?
yeah. Yeah, open it. Yeah, open questions. I mean, we can make it as detailed or as broad sweeping as you'd like. If you painted the picture pretty well.
So yeah, so that really shaped her. She didn't speak till she was four. So my mom had, I consider my mom like a very smart person. She has an incredible mind. She's a really great writer. She's very eloquent. But this was like all shaping and forming inside of this baby head where like she was isolated from the rest of the world. Like she has vivid memories before she spoke any words. She has these vivid memories of like observing her reality and feeling like she was basically like an alien on another planet and the world was happening. So she was dissociated. And I think that's sort of a theme for my life, is dissociation. And
Oh God.
yeah, my, and I'm just gonna like just wrap this up, like wrap it up in a blanket of love to say that like my mom is an incredible person. I really adore her. And you know, we're gonna talk about all the ways in which we were like neglected and like all the abuse that happened. And there's this like word that I like, the sentence that I've heard in one of my, a community that I'm in, a Native American community, which we might talk about that and how that helped me a lot. But they say, you know, we come by it honestly. Everything like, you know, like no, we're not making excuses for bad behavior, but we come by it honestly. You know, there was a reason and a rhyme to what brought our parents to where they were. And you probably figured, found that in your own journey too, Renee. Like I saw a little bit with your podcast on your story, a little bit of your story. And I know that there's like the kind of coming to the understanding of compassion and forgiveness for our parents, that piece, you know. So my mom came by it honestly. She lived in a very dissociated world, and her mom didn't actually see her as Valerie. She just saw her as her possession to make her happy. And I
Oh.
think out of all of her children, she used my mom to really fill the void of her soul. So, yeah. So and then they were also very, her mom was very religious and like wanted all her kids to be like nuns and priests and Catholic. So yeah, there was a really religious element of her upbringing. But then she figured, you know, in her like early teen years, like maybe when she was 12 or 13, preteen, that, you know, the Catholic religion was bullshit. And so she started to come to her kind of reckoning early in her life about God and religion. And then she like, she read a lot. She was like a big reader and she really got into like Marx and, you know, all of that stuff and communism. And she became like an intense radical in the highest form. And so that brings her to UC Berkeley. She's going to school. She's living out of her car. And like she has no money. She's essentially like, and she won't ask for help. And, you know, she's just living on the edge like that. And basically, she gets approached by UC, by church people.
Unification Church people. Wow.
And she's getting approached like constantly, you know, like the Hare Krishnas are out there, you know, this is the 70s and like all the cults are just blooming. And UC Berkeley's like the hub of that for the United States, right? So all of these, like a lot of them are Asian, but a lot of them are also white, but they're all out there for the Unification Church, you know, trying to invite people to both to the Hearst House, their center there, and for like basically to be brought into the church. And then Reverend Moon was going to be speaking at some point, like upcoming to around this time where she's being approached. And I don't remember like the specific like timeline, but she's getting approached. She's getting approached. She's always like saying no. And I think one day she was approached by this white guy who she thought wanted to sleep with her because like that was just the world she lived in.
Dirty
And
fishing. That's called
yeah.
dirty fishing.
Flirty fishing.
It's when you get
So
a hot guy to, or a girl to recruit somebody and bring them back to the church.
I've
That,
never heard that.
yeah, it happens. It happened a lot.
I love that it's like you just like say it for what it is, because you're right. That's obviously what's happening, right? So yeah, in her head, she thought this guy was trying to sleep with her, and also she was hungry. So he's like, free lunch, and she's like, okay, fine, I'll come for the free lunch, right? So she goes, and I remember exactly her ex at that. That was just at the Hearst house, but I do remember her experience going to see Reverend Moon speak. So, and from now I'm just gonna call him Moon.
Yes, let's
Fuck
do
the
that.
Reverend.
Fucking Reverend bullshit. You know what? I'm the Messiah. You can call me Messiah, Renee True Mother. There we go. We're having flinging around self-proclaimed titles here.
So funny. What a fantasy. Okay, so yeah, so okay, so another day sometime in the future, it's like raining, she gets approached by this Asian guy, and he had approached her a bunch, and she finally was like, what is this? Okay, I'll have a look. Oh, so it was Moon was gonna speak, and okay, this is funny, but I think she's actually right here.
Your
My
mom,
mom. Yeah.
Valerie,
Mom,
Valerie,
are you here? Can
Valerie.
totally edit this out,
I could totally edit it out,
right?
yeah.
Okay. Hey, Mom. I'm talking about you. And so, I feel a little awkward because you're just like right there.
If she wants to come say hi, she can be part
Renee
of the
wants to say
podcast.
hi. It's a little bit busy in this office, so it might be hard to walk through. Hold on.
And if she wants to be on the
Valerie.
you don't have to put me in there. Why
No,
don't
it's
you
just
come on
audio. Oh,
over,
she's not.
Valerie? Hi.
Do,
Hi,
do,
Renee.
do,
Really
do.
good to see you.
It's good to see you. You're with Colleen. How great. You're doing well. You look good.
Sharing the same space, basically, right now.
That's nice. Yeah, she's we're just catching up, so I don't know if you know I have a podcast.
Oh, I do know. I've
Oh,
listened to
and
it many times.
wonderful. Well, if we're actually recording an episode for Colleen right now, and she was actually starting with your story.
Oh, lovely. That's something fascinating. Well, I'm going to be listening to it someday. So, oh, anyway, I shouldn't say that. It might make you uncomfortable, but
No, it's fine. We talk about everything. It's just awkward to talk about you in the
all
third person
the
while you're walking around.
bullshit. Understood. Anyway, I was just heading into my room to get something, and then I'm going out on the back porch. So you're going to be here completely by yourself.
Okay, if you'd like to say hi to the audience, I could keep a little hello. Also, are
Yeah, absolutely. I'm assuming this goes in.
you're
So
interviewing
I'll
ex
see you.
first gen too a little bit, right?
Yes, I interviewed Eileen, and she actually wants to do another series.
Okay.
Or maybe her and I talking together might be a fit
Oh,
sometime.
I mean, why not? I could set that up. That would be cool.
And just want to say, I don't consider myself an ex first gen.
That's
I'm
fine. Neither
a
does Eileen. She's still a believer.
Really? I'm simply going to another level, a different level, because life is growth, right? And I'm just pulling it all apart in the most, for me, interesting way.
I love that. I love that for you, Valerie. I love the
Years when I wasn't pulling it apart. It seems like a lot of lost time, but I am now, and it's fun. I'm ordering books on Amazon and just trying to find all the stuff that I never knew about. And it's my group. It's a group that I was in for many decades. I want to know everything about it. So to me, that's really interesting.
She's doing the deep dive, baby.
Yeah.
You're just as tenacious as you were in your Berkeley days.
I'm just tenacious.
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. I'm
that's
there.
Valerie.
No, you're not going to pull it away from me. I'm going to dig my teeth in. Anyway, you look really great, Renee. It's
Doesn't
lovely to see
she?
you. Yeah.
Oh, you want to see the
Lovely,
cards we
lovely,
pulled?
lovely woman.
Look, this card is it's Renee.
With my
Doesn't that look like
podcast.
her?
Very much so. Yeah, let's put it on the
Seems cute.
podcast. Yeah, beauty.
And it's compassion card. So.
Okay, so I'll depart and yeah, continue with your thing and don't worry about me at all. I'm gonna be on the back porch.
Okay.
And
okay, love you. Bye.
And you also just
oh, you want to say something to the mic? Okay.
I've listened to thousands of podcasts, and part of the thing that's fun about them is that there's always stuff going on in the background, like
you don't mind that when you listen,
dog or the cat jumping up on the lap.
It's like real life is happening.
It's just real life happening. Okay. And yeah, I've always loved that, so I'm sure.
Okay, well then I'll let my hair down.
It makes it relatable, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Okay.
Point. I take that as a blessing from the Valerie.
Yes. So, speak of the mother, she arrived. Oh,
the one true mother.
Damn. Okay.
Back to the, and that wraps up episode one.
Okay, so Valerie. So at this point you'll have a clip of her, I'm guessing. That'll be nice. Okay. Are we ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay, so basically she gets invited to go see Moon Talk, and she's like, I'm gonna go protest. I'm gonna go to the talk and I'm gonna go to protest. Which it turned out on the day of the event, everybody was there to protest. Not a single person. Do you know this story? No, Melina hasn't told you. Okay. I'm going to keep asking that for random things. Like, wait, do you know this already? I'll just act like you don't know anything. Okay. Yeah. So she goes and everybody's there to protest, and she's in the back of the hall, and Moon is there with his interpreter, translator. And basically it's chaos in that space. Everybody's just screaming like, get out, like they're just protesting like the right wing, right, religious, right? And kind of similar to today's environment in a lot of ways, where it's like the liberals and like the right, like there's a huge faction and intensity. I feel like that was what was happening at Berkeley, and Berkeley's like that, right? So this guy comes in to speak about God and like bringing God back into America, and all these like college kids are like, get out of here, we don't want you. And he's there with his interpreter, and basically my mom said every time it would get too chaotic and loud and he couldn't actually speak, he would just start singing like Korean, like country, like, you know, songs. And
the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. When it comes to my memory of Korean language, it's all like lives in songs, because I love music. Yeah. So yeah. Like I have them all ingrained in my brain.
Belt one out for us if you feel.
Oh like. Yeah, I'll sing you all a Korean song. Okay, so then he's in one of those lulls where it's quiet, and he had just sung or something, and my mom takes the opportunity. She stands up on a chair and she screams, "Why is God he?" And, you know, as a feminist, she's like, and I would have done the same thing, right, if I were her. So then the translator like whispers, you know, to Moon what she said. And then turned out, like, from that part of the speech on, the translator would say, God, she. It's like really modern, right? Like they,
God
them.
Is a woman.
Yeah, right.
She was waiting for Ariana Grande's song.
Yes, I love that. So she felt completely like humbled and embarrassed that he actually took her note to heart, and it caused her to listen. So from that point on, she started listening. I see you shaking your head, right? Yeah. So she starts listening, and so that's what got her, was that she was angry and he responded with love to her, right? So yeah, do you want to say something?
Oh, it's just the translation bit is so fascinating, like getting lost in the translation. It creates a certain, what's that, like a drum roll, like, ooh, what is he gonna say?
Because the anticipation,
like, yeah, it like the anticipation, I feel like, is a big factor we haven't really acknowledged yet in listening to Moon speak.
It's like a power move.
Exactly. Yeah. And also I feel like half of the theology was written, was lost in translation, and people just like take what they want.
Oh, Renee, we can go into that. We can go into that. Because right. I translated for speeches in Goth.
Shit. Yeah, just like I said, like Adam Dub, himne, whatever. Like you could just pull whatever you wanted from that, like extrapolate whatever.
Dude, you're speaking to something that I literally just, like, this is just a little bit of a tangent here, but an important one. This is wild because I haven't thought about that in a while. And I was just thinking about this just a few days ago outside my house in my backyard. And I was like, damn, you know, because I was like impressed with myself. I was like, I used to translate in like in real time from Korean to English for the kids when I was in like my third and fourth year. So we go to like speeches. It wasn't Moon. It was like, you know, different leaders or whatever. And I would translate real time. And my brain was moving so fast, man. Like I was taking in all of this information, like really complex language. And then I would translate it into like some sort of coherent English, mm-hmm. you know, like inspiring speech, right?
Right. Yeah. With a cutting twist.
Right. Because I think everybody that translates always, you want to not, but you add some of yourself to it, right?
Always.
And so, but I was literally just thinking about this and I was like, I had no fucking idea what they were saying. I don't think, like, I understood Korean to a degree. And I think my Korean was pretty, pretty good at that time in my life. I think I had a pretty good, a pretty good grasp of the language. And I mean, like, I had conversations, like, I went to an all-girls Buddhist middle school.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So we're going to, I don't know if we'll go into all of this, is a lot of stuff, but when I was in boarding school, after you'd studied the main language program, which was a year and a half long, then from then on, you went into a real Korean school and you could choose which school you went to. And I chose this all girls Buddhist middle school. And
did you choose, though? There was such a high pressure to take that one school.
No, I don't remember that pressure. I actually just went because my friend was going.
Okay.
But looking back on it, my best friend, and she wanted to go to that school because her favorite older sister, her favorite Unni, was there. I were the two, only two of our year that chose that school. And so we went there. And I was there for a year and a half, two and a half, is that right? Two years? Anyways, while I was in that school, I became friends with the Buddhist teacher. She was also the phys ed teacher. She was definitely a lesbian. I didn't know these things at the time. Like, she had like a total boy haircut and she was like really tomboyish. And I really liked her. And she was trying to convert me to Buddhism from the UC, from Unification Church. She knew that I was part of it. And I remember sitting down in her office and having like a philosophical dialogue in Korean with this woman about religion. So I feel like my Korean was probably okay. Like looking back on that part, but then translating in real time the Unification Church ideology to 13-year-old kids in English, I looked back on that and I was like, I was bullshitting. I had to have been like, I was just like trying to make sense of what they were saying.
And they benefited on that because you did inevitably make sense and added value to the bullshit that they were.
I'm sure I said things like, "For God's dispensation, we need to work really hard. Don't think about yourself. God is crying. Father needs you." Like just things like that, you know? Wow. Indemnity.
Oh my God. So
I'm looking back on it and this is like a great, great conversation and dialogue that like we could go into, but just the way in which cults use nonsense to create the feeling of sense.
Wait, you have to say that again.
Okay, how the cults use nonsense to create like a feeling of sense, but I'm trying to grasp that
sentence right there is the unraveling of my life. Like
yeah
sometimes I feel completely satisfied in chaos and nonsense because we've grown up
Yes.
in it for so long. And you
Yes.
come down to the real world and you're like, this doesn't make sense because our
Yeah.
brains are so preoccupied with getting lost, literally getting lost in translation, where that's like, oh, I'm neurodivergent. Motherfucker, I was raised in a bilingual, trilingual cult, and I have no idea what this identity of eugenics is. Like, you think you're neurodivergent? Like, take a look in my fucking brain. I don't even know what it's saying half the time.
I'm losing my shit, Renee. That this is like, yes, I feel like this is like, this is the problem in a nutshell for us, for our brains.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we were recording at the time when I came to a similar moment. Remember when I was saying like dealing with my brain as an adult coming from where I was coming from,
Oh, yeah.
I felt like I was dumb for a long time. Like I wasn't dumb. I was like you said, lost in translation.
The telenueve. We were like stuck in it. It's like an alternate. It's the land of Channel Gook. It's
Yes,
everywhere and nowhere all at once.
I mean, like, if one were to say, like, you know, people ask you, like, when you say, you know, I grew up in a cult and I'm not in it anymore, and then they're like, well, like, how has it been? And like, they ask these random questions. They don't know like what questions to ask because they didn't grow up, so they have no perspective, right? But you're like, what I say to people is like, what if one day somebody said, and I think that this is kind of true, I think the whole world is a series of cults. Like the way that people in society, the way that we have to function is a whole series of culturation, I don't know how you would say that, but like we need culture for social cohesion, right? We need to have things that we all agree upon. So everything in the world has some degree of cultishness. And, you know, the United States of America is like a major cult, like the way that people think about identity within a country or all these things in politics. You know, there's all these different identities and ways that you identify, right? Anyways, so if somebody asked me like what it was like leaving or what it's like now and all this stuff, you know, I just say like, well, imagine if one day somebody was like, everything that you thought and believed about like who you are as an American citizen or whatever it might be, like take any identity, and then they're like, all of that's false. Everything that you thought was true is false. And I think people come to that to some degrees, like when we talk about gender identity in the world now, and it's like this whole, that's all like opened up, right? It's like, well, gender is a construct. And like, for us growing up, nobody said things like that, you know, and our parents didn't live in that world. And that's like the new world we're living with in, where everything's blowing up. And you have to reorient yourself, right? Like, and it's a complete reorientation. So yeah, if somebody were to say like America's not real or that identity is not real, and how would you live the rest of your life? And like, if you were to think about that, if somebody were to ponder on that, they'd be like, well, it, you wouldn't, because that's like, it's woven into your whole self, right? So it would take a lot of time and work to remove that from the fabric of your being. Am I making sense?
I remember the first time I went to Korea, there was a huge, what it was called, culture shock. and I feel like I've shifted identities. You've shifted identities plenty of times with the, you know, going back and forth between countries. So it's a little more easy to understand that kind of fluidity. But it's still hard to navigate your boundaries when you're constantly being shifted. I don't know.
Tell me more.
I don't know. I'm losing my mind.
Yeah. Well, the fluidity of I mean, like they call it, I remember the term, the third culture kid, third culture
oh,
kid.
Oh, yeah. Third culture kids. That's, oh, shit. Now you're throwing me into a different dimension. So kids that are born like us of nationalities,
yeah,
mixed race kids,
yeah,
we are more susceptible to becoming extremists in whatever culture we assimilate into because we're like subconsciously feeling out of place.
Wow, that's potent, dude.
Yeah, that's what I read in one of Robert J. Lifton's book about thought reform. He was studying a Canadian girl who got wrapped up in communist camps, I think, but she was like really ready to prove herself because for so long she felt she didn't belong in Canada. And
Renee, wow.
And I related to that character so much because I was like, wow, for so long, like I'm half Asian in America, but being thrown into Korea, even though it's not my race, I don't care. Like, I feel like I'm going to prove myself. I'm going to double down. I'm going to learn this language. Like, I'm going to do the best because at least I can finally feel like I belong somewhere.
Yeah. Do you remember thinking that at all at the time?
I remember going into GOP and feeling like it was like Neverland. Like we were all lost kids. Like, oh, but I didn't know how lost we were. But it was nice to have that community. It was powerful.
This is fun. I'm enjoying just like kind of going with the flow. I think that's better for me. Just is like riff. I hope that's
I think
okay.
We're both like neurodivergent as fuck.
It's hard for me to follow the path. Like I'm gonna go off into the brambles.
It's okay.
Okay, but I love what you just said because I feel this like difficult feeling, a lot of feeling understood or not feeling understood around my identity, around my selfness. Like, so what you just said just really reminded me of something that I've been grappling with lately. I'm just going to go into a little story, but I joined like this creative cohort that we meet on Zoom once a week. And I really like it. But the first gathering, I remember feeling all the feelings that I feel when I'm like meeting a new group of people and like trying to feel like, do I fit in kind of thing? Am I accepted? You know, and all those feelings that one might feel. And I think it is a human condition to want to feel understood and to kind of feel like you need to feel understood. And I was just reflecting on how, like, when I'm in situations like that, where I feel like nobody will ever understand me and I feel so different, and like my particular struggles, like when it comes to like creative work, like we're talking about creativity in this cohort, and like people are being vulnerable, and I feel like my vulnerability feels like an ocean depth deeper than their struggles, and that might not be true, but I definitely feel like I struggle with feeling different. So what you just talked about made me feel like understanding for myself, like why it's extra hard being like mixed race and also growing up in a cult.
I feel like what you just said about oceans deeper than other people's struggles, I feel like maybe it's just bigger scale. Like instead of like just having a lifetime from a small town with your one family, like we're talking about transcending borders and families and cultures, and we literally traveled as kids to other countries, and
right,
there's we spanned the whole earth as children,
right?
And so it's a lot more to unpack in your
identity.
Nuanced. Yeah, but it's not harder. I feel like all pain
Get
is
that.
Pain,
yes,
but it's just harder to understand in context and to put it into context.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. So I think I in the past, and I want to do better with this, but I've struggled with feeling like I remove myself from situations where I don't feel understood.
Oh yeah. I shut down all the time.
Yeah.
With that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think therapy will definitely help. You know, I've done therapy on and off, but I feel like I definitely need more, but you know, I think I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. I brought this up to them and they were like, you know, it really comes down to self-love. And I know it's so simple and so like, but it's true. I think, cause I'm still working on it, but like, I feel like the more that I can just really love myself. And I know those words are easier said than done, but like, you know what I mean? Like rather than trying to prove oneself to the world,
right?
Just like, no, you know, like, I've been doing a lot of inner child healing.
Yeah. I feel like, if you can just live in the moment, none of that stuff really matters and you can really enjoy where you are now. Cause that's what I'm trying to do. That's where I'm at. Is just like, you know, whatever happened, however many miles my life has spanned, like, I just kind of want to be here now.
Absolutely.
And enjoy it.
Yeah. Same. I'm glad that I can finally feel like I can. Like I've been hiding from myself for a long time. I feel like we should get back to the main road.
I feel like we need to talk about how you did that and why it was so hard to begin with. Yeah, let's go back to your mom and dad.
Okay. So basically my mom joined the church. Moon got to her. when she heard him listen to her essentially and change his tune, calling God he, she, him, her, she listened. And she said when she listened, what she heard was he was talking about how the world would heal when our families heal. And in essence, like God is in the family, and we'll find world peace through the family. And it spoke to her because of her broken ass family, right? She didn't have a dad. And I know a lot of these adults who joined, a lot of our parents who joined, were joining a family. They were finding their mom and they're finding their dad. And perfect, right? Because he was true dad. Like, oh, that was his nomenclature. So perfectly fit in for these lost boys and girls that were our parents. And she was definitely a lost girl, angry. She wanted to blow the whole world up. She wanted all men to die. She thought men were the problem. And that was partially true for sure at the time. But then when he spoke to her heart, she was like, oh no, he's right. God is in the family. And that's the way to peace in the world. And so in her head, she was not thinking that she was joining a religion. She was going to join him, that he had the right idea and he was going to revolutionize the world. So she wanted to just do whatever he did, right? So then she starts reading the Divine Principle, the book of the church, and she's like, yeah, I'm following this guy. And little by little, it starts to seep in through the lectures that she's going to, that this is a religion that she's joining. But at that point, her heart, she had already fallen in love, right? Like, when I hear about love stories on TV and stuff, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around that, which is a whole other issue. But when I see stuff like what my mom did, like for her, that was like love at first sight. Like that was the romance, right? It was like, yeah, it was like no going back from there for her. So that's my mom's story, essentially. And to be honest, I don't know my dad's story. He was an enigma, but I know a little bit about him, but that was my mom's story. So my dad joined in Japan, and he, as far as I know, he grew up in poverty as well, and he was quite neglected by his parents, but he would never admit this, but we know this from stories that he's told and sort of given himself away. But I think his parents were very much like, they were focused on making money and getting out of the little shack that they lived in. You know, he grew up in this like shack of a home for his whole life. And they were saving up, his parents were saving up money so that they could buy a house. And they didn't buy the house until he was already out of the house. Like he was like fully in college. Yeah. So he sort of raised himself, and he was the oldest of three kids, and his brother and sister really looked up to him. And, you know, in Japan, you're supposed to take care of your parents as the oldest son, but this is my interpretation of my dad. I can't ask him because he's now passed on, but I think that he felt very different from the rest of his peers. He's very tall. He was very tall, and he had a very like noticeable face. Like, you remember my dad, like as a Japanese man, he was kind of unique. Like he stood out in a crowd. And I think as it comes down to it in my life, I'm realizing how much I inherited a lot of my dad's personality traits, and he's very idealistic. He's also very artistic, and he sees beauty in everything, and he's very innocent and childlike, which is a big part of who I am. Very childlike, very playful. And I think for sure, like we're talking about neurodivergence, I'm consider myself both genetically and environmentally, like from the trauma, neurodivergent. But I think my dad was also neurodivergent, and I think he didn't fit in. And I'm pretty sure he just felt, you know, in Japan, everything is like very much about like fitting in, right? Like we're all sort of like doing the thing together as a group. You're not supposed to stand out, right? And so for him, I think he had a dream to be a Hollywood movie star, and he studied film and he wanted to be a movie star. But he said this so many times growing up, he said to me, I wanted to be in front of the camera, but I was too shy. So I'm now behind the camera. He was a cameraman. And his dream was to be in front of the camera. And so in Japan and in his family, I think he didn't feel like he belonged. So he dreamed of going to America, and he was in love with the TV show Lassie from the 50s. He was in love with the mom. of that show, and he wanted that life. Like, to him, that was his dream, was to have that life. So he came to America for the church, because he joined in Japan, and then he was flown to America to do work in the United States for the church. But I think it was always his heart's dream to be in America. So basically, he abandoned his duties as eldest son, and his younger brother, who he brought his younger brother into the church, and his younger brother basically was like the loyal, you know, younger brother. He said, I will take care of our parents, and I will do basically your duties so that you can go do church work. And that was sort of their deal. And there's like a whole thing. My uncle's still alive, and I feel like there's like this whole unwritten like burden between my dad and him, and he never had kids. He could never have kids. And there's this whole thing, but that's for another day, another time, and not for the podcast. But so that's sort of my dad's story. And he really liked the philosophy of the religion of the Unification Church. Like he loved the Bible, and he loved Christianity, and I think he really loved Jesus. Like I don't think he was raised so Christian or anything like that, but I think he found Christianity as he was growing up, like through high school, and then the church came, and he thought that, yeah, this guy is Jesus's, you know, next guy, and I'm just going to follow it. I think he really felt like he felt God there, and that was sort of his deal. I'm going to take a break to sip on some tea.
The third Adam. And now we have Reverend Moon.
Okay, so Hiromichi Shimoyama, that was him. Yeah. Okay, can you ask me a question? I think I need like a...
Yeah, I mean, I know your dad was the cameraman. I remember, you know, for me, when you talk about your dad, I think of a big yogi bear. He was always like, Dennis, are you hungry? He was always cooking. I mean, in his white shirt, he'd always wear white shirts.
Yeah. Like his Hanes. Yeah.
Oh, your dad. It was always so hot in your house. I'd walk in and he'd be sweating. You hungry? Big, big Japanese man. Yeah,
he was like 200, like at his most, he weighed like 230.
But he was like 6 foot tall or something, wasn't he?
He was almost 6 foot. He was 5'11".
Yeah, he's a tall Japanese man.
And he was muscular, because that was the thing too. He was like a big guy. Very, very athletically gifted.
Yeah.
So
he was always kind to me. I remember.
Aww.
Yeah, he was very kind. He was one of the one dads that would actually talk. Like, I felt like he was present.
That's making me like tear up. Aww.
Yeah, no, for real. Like, because I don't remember many dads in the church even acknowledging if I came over. Actually, they'd be like, don't hang out with Renee. But your dad wasn't like that. So I remember him. He was sweet.
If I think back on how he would talk about you, I mean, like, my dad was not a talker. Like, he was not going to go into things, but he always loved you. Like, the way he spoke of you was like, oh, Renee, you know, like, very positive and upbeat.
Yeah, that's a big reason why I think I could stay friends with Marina, because your parents were receptive of us being friends. And where Aww. That was very rare for me to experience in the church.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, the parents, yeah, your parents were welcoming, and
I didn't know that about the other families.
Appreciate that. Yeah, no, I remember like having girls sleep over at my house, or plan to, and then their dads would drive by at like 11 o'clock, be like, "We're get in the car, like, you're not staying at the Martinez house," stuff like that. It would happen.
That's so gross. I hate that.
Yeah, it's because we were full of sin. The divorced parents, right? The parents that were divorced. Not blessed families anymore.
Like this dark shadow that anything that was not 100% the way, if you were not 100% the way on paper, because we're talking on paper, inside of these homes, and this is something I wanted to get into, like how much, looking back, abuse I saw in every Unification Church home. Like awful parents, like dad screaming or whatever it might have been. But like, nobody was actually a good family, but it was on paper. You had to be good on paper. If you weren't good on paper, then you were shunned.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can attest to that. I can attest to that. So it was the reason I think me and Marina, I drove 2 hours to see her, because your family was kind as a whole. You were kind. You were all kind to me, and I'll never forget that.
I'm so like tearing up now.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm glad that you found some love and warmth there. And that brings to mind that there was love and warmth in my home, which I do often remember and go back to. Like, I can say, like, I can separate that there was this abuse, the dad that was abusive, and also the home that was loving. It's like they both exist simultaneously. So, yeah. Ah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, your mom was also a big part of that. She was always warm.
My mom was a great, yeah, loving person.
But I mean, I'm not saying there wasn't hard times. I saw the hardship too, and I related to that in your family very, very intensely.
Yeah.
And I saw the
complex,
the pain. Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt like home.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. And also, yeah, it was good. Like, there was a lot of complexities, but I always felt like I had sort of an ally in my mom. And I think she was an ally to a lot of the second gen to some degree. Like, everybody's parents had their different good qualities and bad qualities. But I know, like, for a lot of the kids that I grew up with in our neighborhood, that she was somebody that I felt like people felt safe with.
Yeah. She also was easy to trick. she didn't immediately jump to the worst conclusion like many moms.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. She wasn't strict, right? Like, she was laid back about life. She was strict about sex.
Yeah.
And like what clothes you wore when you went out, but you could change your clothes, right? I'm sure you did. Like, Nina would have done that. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Oh man.
We had some fun times.
So I feel like I want to get into the nuts and bolts of my life.
Let's do it.
What we came here for.
Okay. So let's just say your mom and dad were put together by Moon.
Absolutely. Yep.
And around 1982, they had their firstborn, your oldest brother, and then they had you, and then they had Melina, one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. And we'll fast forward to, I kind of want to say something about your mom's how she was living, you said when she got burned, she dissociated.
Yeah.
And I want to say something about the divine principle that's been swimming in my brain all month, is that the divine principle was a book about dissociation.
Wow. Tell me more.
How to live further in that. So for people who already were dissociated and then finding this book, it finally makes sense of so many things for them that they can live further in their dissociation. And what I mean by that is, well, I mean, the first sentence is everybody's seeking happiness and looking to avoid suffering. Yeah, that's true. And then it goes further into dividing the mind into positive and negative and internal nature and external form and yin and yang and
That's all very, sorry to interrupt, but that's like ancient Chinese, Asian medicine, like spirituality.
It is, but then
the Tao.
I don't know. For me, when I was reading it, I felt like it separated my original mind, and I quote original mind, into
two parts. That's Moon's, right? Yes. So Moon's infusion of the bullshit of original sin, because he took that from Christianity, right? The fall, eating the apple. So he infused, it was like the perfect infusion of Eastern philosophy with Christian guilt.
Yeah.
That marriage. Mm-hmm. And that was his little special sauce.
Yeah, that special sauce created so much dissociation in my own body for decades.
It's brilliant how you just said that. No, I totally get that. Yeah.
But for our parents who joined and were already living in a trapped mind, in a body, you know, mind and body, whatever that was, mind and body unity that it kept preaching about, that probably really rung true for these people that were living in trauma. Mind yeah. over body, mind over body. You know, it makes it worse when you double down like that, actually. It makes it worse.
I'm having deja vu right now. Oh, wow. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Whoa. Sorry. Like that this moment with you happened before, but that means that something, I feel like something's like some firing's happening in my brain.
But yeah. I mean, this is just what I've been thinking about literally all month, about how, you know, we read that book as children and it separated our mind and body. And so I couldn't communicate with my body, my needs and my wants and my feelings for years. But the people who joined, they must have found this book and felt comfort. They must have. But I grew up in discomfort.
Interesting. So it was like a balm for their dissociated soul. And then like us innocent beings woke up into their dissociation.
I feel like that could be true in some ways.
You want to go into it a little bit? I'm taking it in and I want to like think about it, like dive in a little bit. Let me think. Cause there's a lot there, like the whole mind body unity and separation, like the dissociation of yourself to your mind. I'll just speak to like what I know presently and what I know of like my mom. And this is something, you know, my mom and I, just for the audience, for the listener, my mom and I and my sister and my mom, like all of us, we have an open dialogue and she is an open book. And I hope she gets to do a talk with you. She's great. And she's definitely still in it in her heart, but she's dissecting it. She doesn't go to church or anything like that, but she's trying to dissect it all. But she's an open book and we talk about anything and everything, including, you know, any wrongdoing she's done. And she's always happy to listen and, you know, take responsibility for things. So just to say that as a disclaimer. But she has a very hard time feeling her body, mm-hmm. like being in touch with her body just as a person. And I'm sure the church emphasized that and like magnified.
They made it a good thing. They were like, that's not a weakness. That's a strength.
To like ignore your body.
Oh yeah, that was a goal. Oh, you don't have to sleep for 24 hours. You are extra spiritual. Good points. You get good points.
You're right. Because, you know, when you think about the origin, I'm just going to kind of just loop around for a second. But if you go to like the origin of like Chinese medicine, which I'm like really into like Taoist stuff and like Buddhist stuff. And like I meditate and like thinking about the mind and body is something that I do. I'm really into, because this is something that will be part of my story, but I've had like chronic health issues for a long time. So I've been like taking charge of my health, and Chinese medicine and like Tai Chi and Qigong are so amazing. Like they really understand a lot. And I think like Moon took a lot of that, but then like bastardized it. So what you're saying is interesting, because if you're thinking about how to tend to your body and how to like be a human on earth with the philosophy of Chinese or Asian like philosophies, it's not at all what we grew up with. Like you're right. We completely ignored our body. And yet he started out his book using those main points of the Chinese medicine and philosophy of like spirit and all that stuff. I can't even remember the divine principle shit. You remember it better than me, even though I gave lectures on it. My God.
Yeah. What was the goal? We studied it like 3 times a year and read each different color categorized paragraph, like read it only in blue one time and then only the pink and then only the yellow.
That's what you did when you were in Korea?
Yeah. And in my family too, we woke up every day to read Hundake. And yeah, that was like my bedtime story, my morning story. That's what I grew up reading.
We didn't do that. We did read, but we weren't as methodical. Sounds like your family was very methodical. Well, your dad's a doctor or a lawyer?
He is a doctor, yeah.
Doctor, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think you grew up with very smart people.
People, yeah, they're a little bit different. They're a little bit off.
Heady, yeah.
Yeah, very heady. But I just remember how it made me feel. I might have read it over 20 times, but it was a garbage book. It's 0 out of 10, like wouldn't read it again. But I remember basically what it did to my mind, and it made me a prisoner in my own body.
Do you remember like taking it in and then like something shifting for you as you took it in?
Yes, I do. I do remember.
Do you want to tell me about that?
Oh man. Maybe just reading about like mind over body unity and just applying that to and seeing so many people apply that in conditions like cold shower conditions or no eating for, you know, 7 days or no talking conditions, like just seeing that really intense philosophy played out in real life and seeing like and thinking this is how you become the master of your universe is by dissociating further. It's kind of difficult for me to come back from, but thinking it's a good thing, like we pushed ourselves so hard into not feeling our bodies and we thought it was a good thing.
Yeah, well, okay, I want to because like as you're saying this, I want to like understand more fully like what your experience was, but can I share like what mine was so we can compare notes? Because when you're saying that, like all I remember is like the way that my brain worked about this was like basically I did not have, it's like I didn't have a self that saw, I didn't have a self that was watching, I didn't have yourself. Sounds like you had like an observer self, like analyzing your indoctrination. What do you think? Because like for me it was,
oh,
like,
oh shit,
do you see what I'm saying?
I had this dark depression that would come over me during the indoctrination period, like every once in a while, like every 3 months or something, and it would draw really dark things. I remember I have these images.
I remember your art.
Yeah, I have these images of me cut in half.
I remember this stuff, Renee, and I was like, I remember feeling like really startled.
Yeah, no. So some part of me knew.
Wow.
Some part of me was watching and knew, but I couldn't take the wheel. I couldn't fix it. Like I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I was drawing it and it was being expressed somehow, but it was like a message to my future self because I did not understand it back then. I understand it now. I get it. I understood something was wrong. It was dissociation. It was forced indoctrination. It was this toxic, damaging ideology. Some part of me knew. That was the creative side of me knew and was screaming for me to wake up. But I didn't have the strength or foundation to do that.
Of course, yeah.
Or the community. I mean, we were children. Yeah.
Yeah,
we were babies.
Yeah. You're like we're little minnows, and that was just the pond we were in. We're going to grow up to be what our parents were. You know, there's no other reference.
So you saw that in GOP. You already knew. I mean,
I remember. Yeah.
Seeing like, this is some dark shit, but it's applicable. But why?
I just thought you were a genius. I always thought you were such a, such a talented person. Like, I was, you know what? Because I consider myself an artist these days, you know, and I believe that all humans are artists. We all create, you know, but when I was taking time off from the world to take care of my health, I stopped working. Art started to like just come into my life more. And I realized like I had always had this like yearning to create art. And I had this voice in my head for much of my life that I couldn't do art, like that I was not good enough or something. So like, I remember just as a child, like childhood friend from Nutley, she was such a tremendously gifted artist and her whole family, they were. And I remember you and I remember your art. And I remember always feeling this like inkling, this part of me that was like wanted that too. So whenever I saw people, these young kids, like just doing such incredible art, I was always impressed and touched by that. And so, yeah, I remember seeing your art. I remember that it was definitely disturbing sometimes. These are just like vague memories, right? Because like you didn't like necessarily say, hey, look at the stuff I've drawn. It was just like I would just see it somehow. But
I would leave my notebooks open on the floor just to see, just a reality test, if anybody else, like I didn't
really
announce it, I would just, oh, I'm just gonna leave this here.
It's like your soul was just crying out for like, yeah, wow. That's potent. I love that. And I love that you are doing tattoo art now. And it's like, that's like
full
that thread carried.
Yeah, it did. But you were playing violin. I remember, right? Weren't you playing violin at some point? I would come into the house and you'd be playing.
Really? Well, I don't know when I stopped. I mean, I stopped playing when I went to Korea.
Oh. There was a violin at your house. Your mom wanted to play. She cherished it. She touched it like it was a gift. Yeah.
That's a thread for me, is healing my relationship with music.
All right, that's gonna wrap up part one of a three-part series with Colleen. Colleen, thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your wisdom and insight about what it was like growing up in the Unification Church. Recently, I had someone reach out and ask if I knew about a support group for listeners of the Blessed Child podcast. So I took it upon myself to make a Discord group called Blessed Child Pod. I'll drop that link in the show notes where you guys can discuss and reach out and share your opinions and thoughts. Let's make it a safe place, y'all. Let's be respectful, okay? I look forward to hearing from Colleen again in the next two episodes. In the meantime, take care of your mental health, and we will talk again soon.